Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, September 1st, 2016. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Brewlosophy team member Jake Houlihan joins us to share two of his experiments, one on vitality versus viability starters, and the other on batch versus no sparging. Will the techniques make a difference? And more importantly, will the tie between Steve Wilkes and me remain unbroken? If you're new to homebrewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And if you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener. And don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again, everybody, clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first and click on our associate link on basicbrewing.com. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes and our Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows Phone app. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. And we're on Google Play Music. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our virtual guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support, and thanks to everybody who's done so already. I had a chance to brew yesterday, so I started another kettle souring project. This time, it's the same basic low-gravity 100% rye recipe that I used last time, only I'm using a probiotic as the source for the lactobacillus. Several listeners and viewers recommended the Good Belly Mango Shots. So I was able to find them at a local natural food store. And they apparently have Lactobacillus plantarum. And those who have used it say that it can work at or near room temperature. So that's an advantage if that happens. So after collecting my wort and pasteurizing it at 180 degrees Fahrenheit or 82 C for 15 minutes to kill any of the natural bugs that might have been on the grain, I chilled it to around 110 degrees Fahrenheit or 43 C. And I pitched two of the Good Belly Mango Shots, which are small, the small-sized things, and left the wort to cool naturally in the carboy. So that was yesterday, and I haven't tasted the wort yet, but some say I should get results in 24 to 36 hours. So this time I'm going to use a hop bag instead of the metal mesh cylinder that I used before, and instead of Simcoe, I'm going to use the Equinox HBC-366 hops. So stay tuned for that. I look forward to that. While I was brewing, I was playing with the American Homebrewers Association's new Brew Guru app, and it looks pretty cool. And as you know, the AHA is a sponsor of this podcast, and they asked me to take a look at it. And it seems to be a great tool for AHA members to use to find nearby craft breweries and craft brew bars and member deals at those places. It also points out where the homebrew shops are, and it's got a map there where you can locate yourself and locate where they are. And you can read collections of articles from Zymergy. And it's free. So check out Brew Guru. And if you're not a member of the AHA, I think you can try a trial membership through the app, or at least see what you could get on the app if you were a member. So very cool. Brew Guru. Last time I told you, or actually, Steve and I are planning to get together tomorrow to shoot an episode of Basic Brewing Video. This time we'll be sampling my Blackberry Pilsner. And I'm putting Pilsner in quotes. I'm doing air quotes around the Pilsner part because it's not really a Pilsner. I didn't lager it. But I did use Pilsner malt and with the blackberries. Steve is going back into the sous vide. He's planning to sous vide fruit in various home brews. So I can't wait. I'm sure it'll be delicious. And I can't wait to show off my blackberry beer. It looks and tastes great. Last time I told you about the 12th anniversary celebration of our sponsors, Desiree and Dave of High Gravity in Tulsa. To celebrate their shops turning 12 years old, Desiree and Dave are having a party and offering some good deals. First off, from now until September 12th, you can get 12% off of all of the High Gravity electric brewing systems, 12% off. And now they've added a 12% discount on their High Gravitas beer ingredient kit through September 17th. Plus, you can still take part in the raffle to give away a High Gravity brew in a bag system or $1,000 in credit towards a Brew Easy or build your own brewery system that uses the High Gravity controllers. You can find all the details about the raffle on highgravitybrew.com. And the winner will be drawn on September 17th. Also on September 17th, Steve and I will be at High Gravity to have Basic Brewing stuff for sale and to sign stuff from 4 to 6 at High Gravity, the shop. And we'll be at the party later on that evening on September 17th, which will be at Burn Co. Barbecue from 7 until 10. So I'm really excited about that. Tickets for the party are on sale now at highgravitybrew.com, and they're limited, so get yours quickly, and we hope to see you there. Find out about all this good stuff at highgravitybrew.com, and congratulations to Desiree and Dave for 12 years. Okay, will the Brewlosophy tasting tie remain unbroken between Steve and me? Or who will reign supreme? Let's talk to Jay Coulihan. Well, Jay Coulihan, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me.
You are the newest member of the ever-expanding Brewlosophy team?
Yeah, that's correct. I've been with the team now for a couple months and have done a few experiments and a few articles, and I really feel like I'm fully integrated into the team.
We have two experiments to taste, or that we tasted. One I feel more confident about than the other, but we'll get into that. So let's talk about experiment number one. I don't know what you were testing. We just did the surveys. Did the tasting, did the surveys, and sent them in. So I'm clueless on what the two experiments were. So experiment number one, tell us about it.
Okay, so for the first experiment, we've done quite a few experiments with different yeast temperatures, different yeast pitch rates. So with this experiment, what we decided to do was try a method that we've used quite extensively at Brewlosophy, the Vitality Starter. So we did a Vitality Starter versus a traditional starter in a lager to see if that made a difference, because we found similar performances in ales, but we decided to try doing it in a lager and see if that was reliably distinguishable by participants.
So tell us the difference between the two starters.
So a Vitality Starter, it's a method we've learned about from Colin Kaminsky a while back, and what a Vitality Starter basically is a yeast starter that's only spun for about 4 hours to get the yeast to reach peak vitality prior to pitching, and then the entire amount of starter wort and yeast is pitched after only 4 hours. And generally, we've done about 500 milliliters for the Vitality Starter, which is quite a bit smaller than a traditional starter. For instance, the traditional starter in the beer you tasted had about 2,700 milliliters of wort, compared to the 500 milliliter Vitality Starter.
And so the Vitality Starter is essentially just waking the yeast up, and you don't care so much about the numbers of cells?
Yeah, exactly. That's the theory behind it, that you don't need to oxygenate your wort, and you don't need to increase the cell count. You can just get these yeast cells super vital, pitch them, and then they should have a very similar fermentation experience as pitching a regular starter, which is more based on cell count.
So what did you find on the ale side?
So on the ale side, we've regularly done this and never found a difference between the two types of starters.
Okay, well, that's fairly straightforward. So I'm assuming here that the difference is the fermentation temperature of the beer ale as opposed to a lager.
Yep, so the beer that you guys tasted was fermented at 50 degrees for the bulk of fermentation, and then bumped up a little bit towards the end, whereas the ale starters are pitched at about 66 degrees and then bumped up a little bit towards the end.
Talk about the recipe.
So this beer was a simple Pilsner recipe. I believe I used 100% two-row Pilsner from Germany. And then just a simple hopping schedule of just a 30-minute and a 60-minute addition. And then the Czech Budovice lager yeast, which is out of the Czech Republic. I wanted to make kind of a Bohemian Pilsner because it was, early middle of summer. It was really warm here in Denver. And a Czech lager just sounded like something I wanted to have on tap. Due to the restrained use of hops to really showcase any differences in the variable, I felt like it tasted a little bit more like an American lager, maybe, or just a simple European lager than a Czech lager.
And talk about your method. Is it the same batch of wort split into two?
Yep. So for this specific beer, I mashed in 10 gallons, boiled 10 gallons all together, and then after the boil, I split off the wort into 2 6-gallon carboys where they were hit with the different variable at that time.
Did you chill down to fermentation temperature at time of pitching?
Given the Denver water temperature around here, I was only able to get it to 66, and then I put it in my refrigerator and let it chill further down to 50 degrees.
Hmm. Okay. And did you notice a difference visually in the fermentation between the two?
Actually, yes. The fermentation schedule was starkly different between the two. So we actually pitched these, and then my wife and I went on a vacation up in the mountains. When we came back 3 days later, we noticed the Vitality Starter did not appear to have any signs of fermentation. I had actually thought I messed up and maybe pitched both flasks into the same viability beer in my rush to get out for camping, but I let it sit for another day or so, and then the Vitality Starter started to kick off. It was super sluggish, and it took 30 days total for the Vitality to ferment out, whereas the viability beer was done in about 14 days.
Wow.
So there was a measurable difference in fermentation time that was observed during this beer.
So the question is, does it make a difference on the flavor or on the taste? I guess we should ask, first of all, was there any difference in the finishing gravity between the two?
There was. It was 1 point off, which I'm inclined to just think is a potential measurement error.
Hmm.
So really, in fact, after those 30 days, it had fermented down to basically the same amount as the viability starter, which surprised me.
So the yeast had a bit of a more sluggish start, but they seemed to power through the operation of fermenting those sugars.
Yeah, exactly.
So, is there anything else we need to add before we go into the tasting session?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, here we go. Steve and me in Studio A, testing experiment number one. Steve Wilkes, welcome back to the Studio A, I guess this is. I lose track.
Thanks, James. It's a pleasure to be back.
We got two Brewlosophy experiments today that we're tasting, and we just tasted the first one. We have the green, white, and blue cups in front of us. And again, this was fairly close, I would say.
Very hard to tell apart, yes.
I was going to ask you what your impressions are, but so what do you think?
You don't want to go there. What I think is that, well, I'm going to go out on a limb and just cut to the chase. I think the green sample is different. That's what I think.
I did too.
Good.
We both said the green, and then we got one further question comparing the green and the red, and which do we like the best, and then we were done on the survey. So either it's a very short survey or we missed it.
Yeah, it's one of the two, and I said that I like the red better. So I'm just curious what you thought.
I did too. Now we must say that there was a visual indicator. There was less foam, less head retention on the green than the red and the blue. So that may have been, an indicator in our brains to pick it as the different one. But I tasted some differences.
Yeah, I did too. I thought the green beer was actually kind of watery. And so it tasted thinner in a watery sort of way, not like a low alcohol beer might taste thin compared to, barley wine, but it just had a watery quality about it. None of the beers had a lot of hop character, though I felt like the red, and for that matter, the blue sample, had a, kind of a spicy hoppiness to it that seemed to be missing from the green. Pretty much that's the big difference. The malt seemed to be the same, so I'm assuming that the malt bill, the grain bill for it is the same for all three beers. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think it's a hop test of some kind.
I felt that the... I agree that the red and the blue hop character was more bright, in my opinion. The green beer tasted almost stale to me, like it had been either aged. You remember the experiment we did where we abused the beers with heat?
Yeah.
And then we tasted them side by side. Yeah. It kind of reminded me of that. It seems like it's almost like the beer has been either aged or mistreated in some way.
Well, yeah, maybe the guys at Brewlosophy just yelled at it a lot. They just kind of said nasty things to it every morning before they left the house for like 3 weeks. You're a loser.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Don't anything.
I was going to get political, but I'm not going to. I don't know. There's just something off about it, in my opinion. And, there's always the chance that we could have gotten a weird bottle, and that might have thrown us off. But I think that, and I went back and tasted, the green first, the red, and then the blue first, and then the rinsing with water in between. And the green always had just kind of a whang to it. And I just think that there's something... Definitely something different, in my opinion, from the other two, and not as good as the other two.
I couldn't have said it better myself. So now I don't get the stale quality in the green one that you do. I don't get that, or I don't get that wang sense. But it just seems like there's just something not there that ought to be there. Mm-hmm. So. These Brewlosophy experiments are always so interesting because with nothing to guide you, you don't really know what you're supposed to be looking for. So I've already said I think this is a hop test. Now watch, it'll be like sugar. It'll be something completely unrelated or temperature or something. But the biggest difference I get between the two beers is the hop character. And then, like I say, the green to me, it's not a wang issue. It's just a wateriness.
Yeah, there's almost, going back, it's and again, I may just be talking myself into all this, but there's almost like a little skunkiness to the green one. And we're inside, and these are paper cups, so I don't know. Just seems a little off to me.
It does have kind of that little bit of a Heineken quality to it, just ever so slightly.
It's a green in a green cup.
Yeah,
I'm
gonna do it.
All right, well, we're either right or we're wrong, and either way, we're still tied.
Yep.
Okay, on to the next one.
Excuse me.
Okay, so we agreed on this one. We picked green being the different one. We said less head retention. Steve said it tasted watery and and less bright. And I said that it tasted kind of abused and stale and skunked. And to me, I mean, the more we sip those samples, the more I convince myself that I was correct.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jake, were we both right or were we both wrong?
Well, either way, if you're both right or wrong, you still keep your score against each other. But you were, in fact, both right.
Uh-huh.
The interesting thing about this is this experiment was super far from significant. In my initial panel of tasters, out of the 29 people that tried it, only 7 were able to correctly pick out the different beer. And we would have needed 15. So even with your data on that, that would not have bumped it too significant.
Really? How much time has elapsed between that test and when we tasted it?
Right. So that was my initial conclusion based on listening to your specific tasting notes, was that potentially the fact that had sit in my keyser for about a month. And then was bottled and shipped to you. Maybe sometime during that process, it sped up a little bit more of the staling character, because remember that the viability beer, which is the one you picked out, that beer had finished fermenting for about 14, 18 days prior to the vitality starter. So maybe sitting that time during fermentation, it had already begun to further some staling properties compared to the vitality beer.
So which one was the green one?
The green one was the normal starter.
Really?
Yeah.
So the one that we liked the least and found fault with was the one that was brewed more normally.
Exactly. Yep. I know, it's so counterintuitive.
That's bizarre. Okay, well, I was... these darned experiments, just when I think I'm all confident on my opinion of the results, you know, I get thrown a curve. Have you done any more testing on those, you know, more recently?
Yep. I still have a bit of the viability one left. The vitality one is now gone, but the viability one still tastes the exact same as it did. So I'm inclined to think that possibly during packaging and shipping, maybe it sped up some staling properties, or maybe in fact it was just a bad bottle.
Interesting. Well, I mean, it was probably pretty warm in the UPS truck on its way.
Exactly.
Even though you did an excellent job of packaging those, it could have gotten warm. But, you know, all three bottles were subjected to the same conditions along the route.
Exactly.
So, very interesting.
I know, like all of these experiments, it just leaves me scratching my head. After I collected all the data and this was very far from significant, then your tasting notes just leave me wondering if maybe, in fact, the age of the viability beer being completed faster, maybe that had something, some sort of an effect on how the beers tasted when you tried them, which makes me want to explore aging beer more.
Yeah. Well, we've proven through our little less scientific than your method, experiments that when you treat beer badly, it suffers. So there's no mystery there. But it's interesting, you know, the comparison between the two batches of this brew. Of course, you know, the science is all about repeatability. So it would be interesting to do the same, you know, experiment again just see if you can duplicate the results.
Yeah, absolutely. Though I would prefer not to tie up my fermentation chamber for another 30 days. Maybe if I'm going to go on a 2-week vacation, I'll try this variable again.
Or we can invite, you know, readers, Brewlosophy readers and Basic Brewing Radio listeners to do the same experiment themselves. Interesting. So, okay, well, there you go. I got to feel good that Steve and I each picked out the different one. So let's talk about experiment number two. What was experiment number two?
So experiment number two was actually testing something that we've had requested a lot. It's basically testing the batch sparge method versus the no sparge method. So a lot of us here at Brewlosophy with 5-gallon batches will practice the no sparge method, where when we infuse our mash with our strike water, we'll infuse the entire volume of hot liquor, let that mash sit with that entire volume, and then just run it off before starting a boil, versus a more traditional batch sparge method.
So similar to the traditional brew in a bag method, where you add all of your brewing water at once. It's just that you don't necessarily use a bag, right?
Exactly, yeah. It's very similar to the method that I believe you use quite a bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'll reserve a gallon or two for sparging, but most of the time, yeah, it's all the brewing water at once. And then instead of draining out the mash tun, I take out the bag and squeeze the bag. So, and then, of course, the traditional way is you reserve a certain percentage of the brewing water for sparging, mash with a thicker mash, you know, smaller water to grain ratio, and then drain the first batch of wort out, add the second batch of hot water, and then drain that out again. That method was made popular by Denny Kahn. We must give Denny credit for being the major proponent of batch sparging. So, you know, batch sparging was easier than fly sparging, which is where you kind of trickle the water on the top of the mash as you're loudering. So we go from fly sparging to batch sparging, which is seen as easier, and then to no sparging, which is easier still. But I guess the main question is, does it make a difference? So talk about your procedure this time.
Okay, so for this beer, I brewed 2 5-gallon batches of a simple Kolsch recipe. So it was 95% 2-row Pilsner and a small percentage of Carapils. Some Saaz hops throughout the way. And then in one batch, I mashed in at a liquor to grist ratio of 1.5 quarts per pound, which is fairly commonly used, mm-hmm. and fairly commonly used by me prior to using no sparge. And then in the other batch, I mashed in with the entire, I believe it was 8.75 gallons of water. And then in the batch sparge method, I made up the remaining water so that both worts received equal amount of water in total.
So how did your starting gravities compare?
So I did experience a difference in starting gravities, as many people have noted, using the no sparge method. The no sparge beer came in at 1.05, which I believe was 71% efficiency, and the sparge beer came in at 1.052, which is 74. And that's pretty consistent with what I get on my system using both those methods. So not a huge gravity difference.
Yeah, 1050 and 1052. Did you use a hydrometer or a refractometer?
A hydrometer.
Okay. With my eyes, that's a that's almost negligible.
Oh, exactly.
That's one little right. line on the bubble.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and depending on you know where I'm standing and how I spin the thing and all that. I'd say that's pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
Did you experience any difference in fermentation or anything unusual to note between the two batches?
So I did not. From the time of brewing through the time of fermentation, and I fermented this using the WLP-029 Kolsch yeast, a little bit on the warmer side of the recommended, but from the moment I pitched them to the moment they were done fermenting, I didn't notice any difference. Once they were finished fermenting and I cold crashed and fined them, the batch sparge beer was actually significantly hazier than the no sparge beer, which shocked me. But it was a haze that lasted throughout the entirety of the keg.
Interesting. Any difference in the final gravity?
The final gravity was 1.005 for the batch and 1.006 for the no sparge.
Okay.
So again, fairly negligible.
Did you treat the mash while it was in the mash tun? Did you treat it any differently? Like, did you stir it, stir one over the other, or anything like that?
So with both batches, I mashed in, stirred right away, and took my temperature reading, and they were negligibly different. I believe it was about a half degree difference. And then every 15 minutes, I stirred using one of those big French wire whisks. And I took pH readings throughout the mash, and they both had a consistent pH that was equal, as well as the pre-boil pH. So it seems like the water calculator that I used did a fairly good job of predicting the results I ended up with.
Cool. So they were treated as equally as you could throughout the mash.
Yep, as equally as I can get it in my garage.
Well, that's interesting that the batch sparge was hazier. one would, when you, well, of course, there's, because when you pour that second batch of sparge water in there, or where you pour the sparge water in there, I'm assuming that you poured vigorously, and that kind of, you know, stirred up the mash again, right?
I believe I bottom filled it and then stirred it, which is my normal process. So I'll hook up a hose to the hot liquor tank and hook up a hose to the mash tun and open both valves and let it fill up that way through gravity and then stir it.
Okay.
But yeah, it definitely was treated different during the batch sparge process than the no sparge beer, which I think is a variable of the different process.
Right, right. And but still, it's not, one might expect the, or I don't know, all this is making me, you know, when you run it out all at once, maybe there's the opportunity for a, you know, like a grain filter bed to be created, you know, on the bottom. Do you have a false bottom on your mash tun?
So I use the mash in a bag method. So I have a brew in a bag in there, and I'll fill it with my grains and my water, and then just mash out as you would a normal one with a false bottom.
Mm-hmm.
But it just uses the brew in a bag as the filter.
Okay. All right. I'm just trying to go through all the variables that listeners are screaming about right now. So
I racked my brain trying to come up with what it could be, and just based on how they were treated, I'm inclined to think it's a variable of the process. I use batch sparge a lot, and maybe sometimes it doesn't clear as well, but this was definitely a little bit more stark than normal.
I mean, let me walk through this thought process. You've got your batch sparge, so you run the initial runnings, the first runnings out, and then you pour this other second set in and you agitate it, therefore kind of disrupting any filtering effect maybe that you would have with the grain bed, and then you run that out. So in other words, you're agitating, you know, you're disrupting the filtering action of the husks, and then on the no sparge, all that water's in there, and I'm assuming that you stop stirring a certain number of minutes before you run out the wort, or do you stir up to the very end?
I think I stir for the final time about 15 minutes before the end of the mash.
Okay, so in theory, the no sparge would have 15 minutes to kind of settle down and, you know, kind of establish a filter bed with the husks in there. Is this logic making any sense at all, Jake? Am I just crazy?
I think it does. I think the conventional wisdom about sparging is that you know perhaps it extracts additional tannins, polyphenols, and silicates, and maybe for some reason this batch did extract a little bit more of those and ended up causing a haze in the beer that wasn't able to be found out.
Interesting. Okay. Well, there you go. Are we ready for the tasting?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. All right, Steve, we're at experiment number 2. Are you any more confident with this one than you were the first one?
Not at all. In fact, I'm less confident with this one, quite a bit less confident.
Me too. I think that my theory is that this is a Belgian triple.
Yeah.
Because it seems fairly high in alcohol to me, and it's got the banana clovey kind of thing. I like the beer.
Yeah, the beer's pretty good. Yeah, so it's got that little spiciness going on. So yeah, I think that you're probably right there, pretty close to right. Which one's different? You have to go first this time.
I said blue was different, and you're holding your cards close to your vest. You're not indicating one way or the other. I thought that in the beginning, I thought red was different. But then as they warmed up, I thought the blue had more of a little bit more of a clovey, spicy character going on. And you're still shrugging. And you're not. Let me dig deeper. So, and I haven't tasted them. And then I picked blue, and it told me to compare green with blue, and then I was done. So, I, you know, I don't know if that means that's good or bad. So I'm going to stick with it. My first impression was that the red was different because I thought it was more spicy. But then it calmed down as the beers warmed up a bit, and then I thought blue had more of the spicy, clovey character.
Now, we're pretty close together on this, but I picked green again as the odd beer out, but it asked me the exact same thing. So I picked the green beer as the odd one, but then the second question was, which do you prefer, the green or the blue? I preferred the blue, and I was done. That was the end of the survey for me. So we each had the exact same questions, but we had different odd duck out beers. But my reasoning, again, was the same as the first time. I thought the red and the blue, I thought, were the same beer. They were a little bit more spiced hopped. I mean, I got a little bit more of a spicy character. They both seemed to be a little brighter somehow. So I thought that those were the same two beers, and that would make the green one the odd duck out. But I will say this, when you poured these and they were still quite cold, I thought that the green beer had a very bright, crisp hop aroma that the other two didn't seem to have. And I'm saying this is within 30 seconds of you pouring the beer. Since they've warmed up, that's gone away. I still think my palate still says the green beer is the different beer.
Well, they're very close. And again, this is another one where I'm going back and forth, and it's not like, you know, that's the one, and I'm sticking with it. Right. Now, the first experiment, I'm fairly confident in that one, mm-hmm. Because the difference, the green one was significantly different, in my opinion, and just because of the defects that we were talking about before. This one, all three were tasty beers. All three were good beers. I would have a pint of either. But I don't know. On most of the tastings, it seemed like to me that blue was the standout.
Yeah. If you mean by standout, it was the better beer, I would agree with you. If you mean it was the different beer, obviously I don't.
Yeah.
But again, I'm like you. We are really splitting hairs here, and they're all three perfectly good beers. I'd be proud to brew it, proud to serve it, and any one of the three I would serve gladly to my friends and foes. So again, I'm really curious about what the experiment really is. Is it boil time? Is it freshness of hops? Is it temperature control? I would just be very curious to hear what the parameters of the test are.
I would bet, since it is a very yeast-driven beer, I would bet that it's a temperature experiment.
That's what I was thinking, was temperature, yeah. So we'll find out.
Could be all washed up. We could be all wet all around.
Stay tuned for our next-to-the-last episode. Yeah. We switch over to cars.
Something else will be completely wrong about.
Something we know even less about.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, James.
Okay, Jake. So in this one, the tie could be over.
Because
I picked blue and Steve picked green.
Right.
And we didn't talk about the character of the wort, or the grainy character. Mm-hmm. It was more what we were guessing was fermentation characteristics, although it was very difficult to pick out the different one here, and I was not at all confident in my choice. So, Jake, drum roll, please. What was the result? Which was the different one?
So you, James, should have gone with your initial pick. The red was, in fact, the no sparge beer. So you both keep your win-loss record.
I swear we don't plan this. So we're both wrong. Oh, my goodness. Well, there you go. Well, we're still tied.
I guess there's something there.
I guess there's something there. I'd rather have us tied, frankly, unless I could win. But...
You'd rather be tied than lose.
It makes a lot of sense when you say it. but what about your tasters? How did the data shape up?
So I had a total of 26 tasters taste this experiment. In order to be significant, we would have needed 13 tasters to get it correct. And in fact, we did get 14 tasters that were able to correctly identify it.
Really?
Which shocked me. I have triangle tested this one quite a few more times than I normally do, and I've never been able to get it right. But it does appear that tasters were able to reliably distinguish this specific variable.
Very interesting. So there, according to the data, there was a significant result.
Yeah, exactly.
What were the, on the ones that picked out the different one, what characteristics did they point to?
So just anecdotally, because you took the test and you know that we just ask which beer is different and then which one you prefer. But from anecdotal conversations I had with people after tasting it, the people that got it right said they really couldn't put their finger on it, but that they did note a difference. Some people said things like slightly different mouthfeel, maybe a little bit thinner in the batch sparge, and then maybe some sort of lingering flavor on the batch sparge, you know, towards the end of the sip that caused them to think it was different.
So among those stating a preference, they preferred the no sparge?
Actually, 7 tasters preferred the batch sparge and 3 preferred the no sparge. 3 had no preference and 1 noted no difference, even though they got it right.
Well, there you go. Well, well, it was darn close, in my opinion, and you seem to agree.
I do. I've never been able to get this one right. It kind of bums me out. Maybe I just don't have as good of a palate as I wish I did.
Well, but on the good side, you get to do the sparging method that you like rather than the one that produces the, you know, better tasting beer. If you can't tell the difference, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And no sparge is something I do extensively, especially with 5-gallon batches. It saves about 20 minutes worth of time. And here it produced the clearer beer, which I know it's not important to everybody, but I prefer clear beer.
Yeah, I mean, given a noticeable difference, I would prefer my beer to be cloudy and taste better than, you know, more clear and not taste as good.
Exactly.
But, you know, in this case, obviously I couldn't tell the difference. Very interesting. So you're going to stick with the no sparge?
For 5-gallon batches, most certainly. I get about, you know, between 68 and 71% efficiency using that method, so I can formulate that into the recipe and overcome that hit to efficiency. And in the end, the savings in time is, I think, just the most important part to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we as homebrewers have the luxury of, you know, the percentage that we have to add you know, to make up a difference between a sparging method is so small money-wise that it seems like a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm. And I definitely think this one is ripe for re-experimentation. You know, reproduce it and see if the result is the same.
Well, very cool. I enjoyed both experiments, and I enjoy the fact that Steve and I are both tied, or still tied. we're not both tied. You can't be... One of us can't be tied and the other not. It's kind of redundant to say we're both tied. You know, that's... boy, and I still got to... I got to think about that first one. I've never done a vitality starter. You got to come up with different names because I get vitality and viability mixed up in my head. Maybe quick starter and normal starter for my purposes. But essentially, well, I guess if you get a smack pack from Y East, it's sort of a vitality starter kind of a thing going on, right?
I think so. I think they have some sort of yeast nutrient in there that's supposed to get the yeast healthy and active once you smack it.
Yeah, sort of the same theory. I don't know. Somebody will let me know if I'm wrong.
I'll definitely continue to use the Vitality method with ales. It works fantastic.
Well, excellent. Well, this has been a lot of fun, and I welcome to the, even though you've been there since April, welcome to the the Brewlosophy crew, as if I have the power to welcome you, but I certainly welcome you on the podcast, and I look forward to hearing more from you and reading more of your stuff on the blog.
Well, fantastic, James. Thanks for having me. I really had a great time.
Awesome. Thanks, Jake. Thanks again to Jake. You can find Jake's articles along with an article on alternative batch sizes that I contributed to recently on brewlosophy.com. Lots of great stuff keeps coming from the Brewlosophy team, and I appreciate them keeping us in the loop and letting us play along. It's a lot of fun. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our logbooks where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all those out at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Camco RV Green Disposable Dump Glove, 50 pairs. You've got to have those. And Nostalgia Retro Series Hard and Sugar-Free Candy Cotton Candy Maker. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.